The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from InterVarsity Press and their new book, True Companions by Kelly Flanagan. The book explores how we can enjoy the deeply satisfying transformational love of companionship. Kelly Flanagan's an author, psychologist, and she shows us how to use self-knowledge to help us explore love more vulnerably. Learn more and get a copy of True Companions at ivpress.com. From Spirituality and Health magazine, I'm Rabbi Rami, and this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today, Kevin Anderson, is a psychotherapist, writer, and creator of the Nested Meditation Form. His first book, Divinity in Disguise, was named one of the best spiritual books of 2003 by Spirituality and Health magazine, and his essay, Healing Relationships with Holy Breath Listening, appears in the magazine's November-December issue of this year. His newest book is Now is Where God Lives, A Year of Nested Meditation to Delight the Mind and Awaken the Soul. Kevin Anderson, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Thank you, Rabbi Rami. It's great to be with you.
I'm looking forward to this. I read actually two of your books. I'll just plug the other title, The Inconceivable Surprise of Living, Sustaining Wisdom for Spiritual Beings Trying to Be Human. Just so listeners know, it's a series of fascinating quotes from equally fascinating people, spiritual teachers, and then Dr. Anderson's unpacking of those quotes. Both books are really good, but the book we're talking about is Now is Where God Lives, A Year of Nested Meditation to Delight the Mind and Awaken the Soul. So, Kevin, you and I are both... we're both wordsmiths, we're both authors, and I assume we both recognize that the title of a book is the way an author makes a first impression. So I want to dive into the title before we get into the content. So again, the title is Now is Where God Lives, A Year of Nested Meditation to Delight the Mind and Awaken the Soul. Four words grab my attention. You know, the first one is God, nested meditation, mind and soul. I'm going to put nested meditation aside because that's what I want to spend the bulk of our time on. But I'm sure I'm interested, and I'm sure other people are interested, what you mean when you use the word God, mind, the words God, mind, and soul.
Well, I'll start with God. That I'm mainly trying to shake up my sense that I know what I mean when I use that name. And one of the pieces in the book actually kind of addresses that. Maybe I could just jump into that.
Before you actually read it, let's just let readers know there's a pattern to these meditations. That's part of the process. We'll get into the process a little bit later. So don't get hung up on the way it's formed. That's for a reason.
There's a building repetition and building. So the name God makes you think. The name God makes you think you know what you're talking about. The name God makes you think you know. What you're talking about is that which surpasses all knowing. The name God makes you think you know what you're talking about. Is that which surpasses all knowing to be spoken of with such certitude? So maybe that's a place we can, what do I mean by God? I'm trying to kind of let go of everything I mean by God in that piece. That God is beyond knowing, you know?
So when a reader or a potential book buyer sees this, you know, now is where God lives. I mean, you're offering a pretty sophisticated understanding of God.
I'm hoping to.
Probably there. Well, you're trying to, it sounds to me like you're trying to deconstruct the word God. And not actually passing on trying to pass on a theological position. I'm sure people who buy the book or who see the cover, they've got some idea of God that you're going to deconstruct if they get all the way to April 20th where that poem appears.
Yeah. Well, one of the pieces, sometimes I take words from some of these sages and see if I can fit them into this form that we're going to talk about. And one of them uses Meister Eckhart's words, I pray to God to rid me of God, which really shakes some people up. But he's really getting at our ideas of God get in the way of the really big energies of God, you know. So,
yeah, I mean, the word's loaded. from what I'm understanding, is you're basically deconstructing the word for people. You don't want people to have a fixed notion of what God is, because that's going to close down their thinking. What is that true with mind and soul as well?
Well, I don't think I mean, there are pieces that deal with mind and soul in the book. I think the subtitle is just to say these pieces are meant to delight your mind, to bring a smile, to bring a surprise, and open up a certain soulfulness, a certain depth.
Okay. So that's so soul, when you use the word soul, we're really talking about depth.
Sure.
That's what I'm getting at. So you don't have in your head that people, or maybe you do, but that people have an eternal soul that they need to be worried about.
Yeah, I don't know. I leave that question probably open as well. I try to live in the cloud of unknowing, to use a well-known book title. But
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. That's fair enough. I mean, it's hard to write a title for your book from the cloud of unknowing, because all you can say is, I don't know. Yeah. And that isn't going to sell a lot of books. So let's go past the language here and get into the process, because that's really what the book demonstrates. And I think, in addition to whatever it is people will get from your writing, my understanding going through the book was that you were trying to get me to learn the practice and do it on my own. So as a person who does a number of daily spiritual practices, I'm intrigued by your concept of nested meditations. And you mentioned the word in the very beginning, but it went by pretty quickly. I'm just going to read a phrase from the book. What you talk about: repetitive poetic reflections that use the lightness of wordplay to achieve a surprising emergence of deeper awareness. A lot of meat there. Let me read it again. Repetitive poetic reflections, and you're going to hear that when you hear his poems. Repetitive, and of course, I'm repeating it, right? Repetitive poetic reflections that use the lightness of wordplay. So the words aren't fixed, they're all fluid, to achieve a surprising emergence of deeper awareness. How surprising? I mean, this is really from your, and I don't want you to define the term for me, but from your unconscious, they just sort of pop up?
Well, I'm not a big Freudian in terms of speaking of the unconscious that much, but I would say it comes from a playful approach to words. It comes from trying to get off of habitual thoughts and habitual patterns and see if I can kind of jump the groove and end up somewhere I didn't even know I was going.
Yeah, right. So the unexpected, it's not like you're sitting there going, ah, man, what is the right word for this? It's this playfulness where you, the writer, may be as surprised as the reader as you work through it. Give us a couple examples from the book that help the reader understand how this sounds.
Yeah, well, I think this is a little unusual, but I want to read one and kind of talk about it as I read it, to talk about the process of what it's like to write one of these.
Great. Well, that's fantastic. But just read it for us through once and then go ahead and unpack it.
Okay. I want to leave this world awake. I want to leave this world awake of love behind the speedboat of my years. I want to leave this world awake of love. Behind the speedboat of my years, waves are rolling out wide and far. I want to leave this world awake of love. Behind the speedboat of my years, waves are rolling out wide and farther back. The water is glass again.
Great. So let's unpack that. How does this reflect the process of nested meditation?
Well, the first thing is that I consider these kind of a playful form of cognitive therapy, which is quite big in my field, that if we want to deal with some emotion or some kind of stuck place we're in, we need to look at our thoughts and see if we can move them. But straight up logical, like, I got a maladaptive thought, how do I change it? I got to fix this, versus can I play my way there? Can I let wordplay take me somewhere? And so if I can tell just briefly, this particular, the first line, I want to leave this world awake, came at 5 a.m. I got up, it was the day before my daughter's wedding, but it was the morning after a 4-hour meeting with my whole family about my mother having cancer and whether we should do chemotherapy because she already was dying of dementia. And so I'm just sitting in this meeting the day before, like, this is too much. Wedding, death, cancer. So I wake up early and I just open my journal and I get this one line. I want to leave this world awake. And I'm thinking of my mother, like, maybe it'll be a blessing if she dies sooner and actually knows us instead of losing her into that fog of dementia. But I'm also thinking, I don't want to get dementia. I want to leave this world awake. So if I went with my logical mind and said, well, what am I writing about? Death, dementia? I would try to think my way to the next line. But when I just look at the word awake, say, I wonder where can that take me? So I split it into awake. And I remember when I wrote it, I'm like, am I talking about a funeral? What is this? I thought, no, let's go with awake behind a boat. I want to leave this world awake of love, what, behind the speedboat of my years. And already something is shifting for me. The energy is shifting, like I'm on a speedboat. I'm water skiing, maybe. And, you know, the speedboat of my years, like, yeah, it goes pretty fast. But, and then the piece ends with waves are rolling out wide and far. And then you just put a hyphen and farther back, the water is glass again. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the way it is. Like, we come into the world, we stir it up for 80 years like a boat engine. And then 100 years later, it's like glass. It's like, if there's anybody that even knows you lived, you probably count yourself lucky. But something about the process of going from just, that meeting yesterday was heavy, to playing with words is therapeutic. At least I find it that way. So
I want to ask you about why is that therapeutic? But before I do that, so you had this meeting, family meeting, about your mom, mm-hmm. and then you're preparing for your daughter's wedding. Mm-hmm. So you're at this odd cusp of two, you know, powerful existential life moments. When you wrote the poem, or when you did the nested meditation, what, if you can remember, what shifted in, if you can remember, like, how your body was before when you just woke up and how your body was afterwards? Do you have any memory of that? I mean, what actually shifted in you physically, if anything?
I think there was a down energy. There was an overloaded energy and a fearful energy, like, this is too much. Wedding and meetings about chemo, and this is heavy. And could I get dementia? And just all of that, what I call small self kind of stuff. And in a few lines of just playing, I seem to get to a more peaceful place of, yeah, I want to leave the world awake of love behind this. Like, it just brought me into the larger self. Mm. Of acceptance that here's what essentially what life is about, and then the water is glassed again.
Let me just take a moment and remind you that support for this episode of Essential Conversations comes from InterVarsity Press. Their new book, True Companions by Kelly Flanagan, explores how you can enjoy the deeply satisfying and transformational love of companionship. You can learn more and get your copy of True Companions at ivpress.com. As I was reading these, I mean, not every time, but often, I got a softening of a physical softening and an emotional and maybe mental, intellectual lightening, if that makes any sense. Just yeah. reading yours, not even doing it myself, just reading what you wrote, that I think, and this is a question, but I'm making it a statement, to what extent is this true when I say, I think that people can actually feel these in their body as this playfulness cracks the heaviness of their situation. Have other people told you that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, people have told me, I mean, this book is set up as one per day, but people just keep plowing through them. They're like Cracker Jack boxes in a way that each one has twists and turns in it and surprises. So people want to go on and and be surprised, you know, by the form is that you use the exact same words and letters. You don't change anything and you try to get it to move by adding the next line. And there's a number of tricks and ways that I do that or tools, but it's like, I thought it was already done. I thought, you know, that's the end, but no, it just shifted. What happened? You know, in fact, there's one that's kind of fun that way that just starts with, these words are light. And I thought, well, what if I hyphenate light? And what could I get? Lightning, like lightning storm or lightning bug. These words are lightning bugs that blink in my mind, and some I catch, but some get away. And then I won't read the whole repetitive thing, but in the last repetition, it's some I catch, but some get a way brighter glow than I can capture on paper.
Yeah, that's the thing about these. And that's where people who love language are going to love not just reading what you did, but doing it themselves. And I'm going to ask you a little bit later to really outline the process so people get the idea. But I want to talk to you about another image that I had when I was reading through these. I got the sense that each of these, even though you're adding, I got the sense that each of these is like an onion.
Ah.
And each verse is, you're peeling it away to reveal another skin underneath. And this is a playful thing to do. And it's all within the world of language. Now, I have a lot of spiritual teachers who will say, you got to, you know, silence the language, silence the mind. This is all ego stuff. But I'm not going to go there. I think that while language can be a prison, playing with it the way you're playing with it unlocks the prison door, if you like, without getting rid of language. I think it's very difficult for people to spend any time without words. It doesn't mean written, but I mean your head. That's how you process. So we've got this language. You can try to shut it up, but I don't think it works so well for most people.
Yeah.
What you do, and I hope I have the right martial art in mind when I say this, I get the sense that you're performing a kind of Aikido on language. You know, in Aikido, in karate, a person punches, you block it with equal or greater force, and you punch back, and the bigger, stronger person wins. In Aikido, you move with in the direction of your opponent, your partner. So if they're pushing you, you just yield to that and then use their energy to flip them over and bring them onto the floor. That's how I read these things, that you're using the energy of language to allow language to reveal something it didn't intend to reveal. And
yes.
So that you see this in a similar way.
Very much so. I mean, Just word, the fascination of language, that a word like run in the English language has about 80 meanings. When your refrigerator runs, your nose runs, you can run for office, you can run a business. So just to look at words fresh and say, well, I know the groove I'm in, what that word means is, but what if I let it mean something else?
Yeah, you skipped my favorite one. You've got the runs.
Well, that may be the 81st definition. But you know, a brief example in the book, it starts with just, I picked you, and then I picked you to be my wife, and then the third line is, I picked you to be my wife and I didn't know you. Which I think the idea is that each stanza is kind of its own separate meditation. So you use the onion image, but nested meditation really refers to nesting dolls, really, that each one fits in the one after it, like nesting dolls. But that the final version of that, I picked you to be my wife, and I didn't know you were a wildflower. So the third stanza is, I didn't know you, which is kind of a truth about how much do we really know when we say, I'll go through life with you. But then I didn't know you were a wildflower. Then you go back to the first line, I picked you. Whoa, now that has a different feel to it, you know? So it's some of them have what I call a circular quality, where once you get to the final verse, the earlier ones look different like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Nested is building them out. And my thought was the onion is bringing them the other way. So, yeah, but I think it works in either way. Because all of it seems to me, and these are your words, is play. And you write in the poem or the nested meditation that's dated June 4th, you say that play is wisdom's portal. So this one really caught me for two reasons. One, I love the use of the word play. I think that people are, I don't know what the word is. I know there's the word homo ludens, but we are the playing animal in a sense. But we're not the only ones. Chimps play, lots of animals play. So play is essential to who we are, but play is wisdom's portal. And I'm wondering if you could unpack that for us. Is play the portal to wisdom? Is play the way wisdom gets beyond wisdom? It's a portal to something beyond wisdom, or am I simply overthinking this because you end up with the idea that where you talk about the hummingbird of hope, and I went, huh? that's not where I was going to go. So what's your sense of play in wisdom's portal?
Well, first of all, when you start with a line like that, I have no idea the fourth line is going to have a hummingbird. And many of these I've written up to 40 versions of one of these, the play takes you in so many directions that at some point you have to say, stop, that's enough play. But what I think I mean is that play has a way of shutting down the adult mind and the solution, trying to find solutions and logically figure everything out, and just says, let go, let me be led by something playful. And I find that surprising stuff comes into that space. I was raised Christian, and there's a famous saying, unless you become like a child, you can't enter the kingdom. So to me, it's just putting on a childlike kind of energy, and actually there's kind of an awe or an openness that comes with that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I'm wondering what you think, how difficult is this in normal times, but in what is now the new normal of COVID-19, where play just doesn't seem to be as natural to people, at least not the people I'm running into. Is play more necessary now? Is this, in a sense, this kind of work which you can do on your own? You don't need, to be with others. You can do this in your home. Is play more essential now than ever, given what's going on in people's lives?
Well, I think anything that grounds us, I find sitting in nature is crucial now. And I think, certainly play. So anything that reminds us that life is inherently good and worth living. I will say that this form very much in me comes from having been raised by a father who was playing with words all the time, but his form was puns. And most people think punning is a very low form of humor, but I was pickled in this sense that you're always playing with words. What surprised me is that you could use that kind of playfulness, not just to be goofy, but to deepen something. In fact, I wrote one of these back in the late 90s, and I thought, well, that's a weird poem. I never wrote anything like that. And it just sat there for 3 years. And then I wondered, is that a form? Could I write more things like that? And I've written over 1,000 of them by now, and I'm just fascinated that playfulness with words and even a lightness with the mind can lead me to a deeper place. Much like you said, there's a lightness of the mind, but a softening or a deepening. So
that's a good segue into how to do it. So without going into such detail that we're going to lose people, but what are the basic rules, if I can use the term in this context? What are the basic ways of actually doing your own nested meditation? Because I hope people are interested enough listening to you and listening to some examples to go ahead and try this themselves.
Well, I get a lot of these sent to me since I have two books that created this form and I've got these out there. And what people tend to do is they don't want to stay with the form. They want to kind of pick new words when they do the next stanza because it gets too hard to play with the words that are already there. So Robert Frost, I think, pretty famously said that he thought that free verse, you know, poetry with no meter, is like playing tennis with a net down, and that he didn't believe in it. You know, he wanted a structure. Well, I write a lot of free verse, but this form has a structure, which is keep the words exactly the same as you go to the next line. Don't change anything except maybe punctuation, put a hyphen, put two words together, or take a word apart. But it's like pulling a rabbit out of a hat when you, whoa, how did I get to a different place with exactly the same words that I used in the last line? If you change the words and just, you know, rearrange the sentence, it's like pulling a rabbit out of a rabbit cage. It's still interesting, but it's not as surprising. How to do it? I would say if we need a good kind of starter line. I actually worked with a patient today in my psychotherapy practice. We actually wrote one together right in the session. And they're not that hard once you get a feel for them. She was struggling with a wound of feeling invalidated, like I'm never good enough. This is a very common kind of wound. And I just said, how about if we start with I'm an invalid? Because I knew that invalid would get me too invalidated, you know, if I just hyphenated it. So you start with one line and then you say, what can I do to move on? So we got to, I'm an invalidated woman. So, and then we added getting to know myself and then shifted in the last, getting to know myself is one with the great self. So in a couple lines, I don't want to go too much into the technicalities of how to do the tricks. I think what helps is just to study the form and try it out and try to stick with the structure of the form. And that forces you to play with the words.
Yeah, I think that's important that people get that you stick with the structure, because that's really what's going to trigger the deeper play. So we're just about out of time, Kevin. I'd love to have you close us out with one more of your nested meditations.
Sure. I'd like to maybe read one, Rami, that's another surprisingly common issue that people bring to therapists like me, but it's also one that I've worked with in my own life. And this particular piece is kind of near and dear to me because it really helped me. I return to it quite often. It helped me get movement. And so this starts this way. I live with self-doubt. I live with self-doubt no more. I live with self-doubt no more than a lone pine tree doing its evergreen thing. I live with self-doubt no more than a lone pine tree doing its evergreen thing in a deciduous forest. And that piece just tells me, don't try to conquer self-doubt. We never conquer the small self. I don't even think Jesus or Buddha or any of the people we talk about, the greats, you know, they don't conquer the small self. I'm not going to conquer my self-doubt. But what if I can go ahead and be who I am, my best self anyway? What if I don't have to look, hey, everybody else is losing their leaves. What am I doing? Why am I not losing my leaves? Maybe I can just be my evergreen self. that piece makes me chuckle, even though I wrote it, and it also helped me at a deeper level.
Well, that, I think that's important. I mean, the fact that you wrote it, I'm not sure. If it's true play, it comes from maybe something greater than that egoic self. But the fact that it makes you chuckle is a way, I think, of returning you to the little moment of enlightenment that it carried. So that's a great way to end. Our guest today, Kevin Anderson, is a psychotherapist and writer and creator of the Nested Meditation Form. His newest book is Now is Where God Lives, A Year of Nested Meditation to Delight the Mind and Awaken the Soul. And his essay, Healing Relationships with Holy Breath Listening, appears in the November-December issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You can learn more about his work at thewingedlife.com. Kevin Anderson, thank you so much for talking with us on Essential Conversations.
Thank you, Rami. It was a delight to be with you.
Really great talking with you, Kevin. Thanks.
Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is the bi-weekly podcast of Spirituality and Health magazine. If you like Essential Conversations, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast app. You can also follow me on Spirituality and Health's website, where I now write a regular column called Roadside Musings. And don't forget to subscribe to the print magazine as well.
Support for this show comes from InterVarsity Press and their new book, True Companions by Kelly Flanagan. The book explores how we can enjoy the deeply satisfying transformational love of companionship. Kelly Flanagan's an author, psychologist, and she shows us how to use self-knowledge to help us explore love more vulnerably. Learn more and get a copy of True Companions at ivpress.com.
Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker Truppiano, and our executive producer is Catherine Drury Wagner. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.
Are you looking for help on your path to healing? I'm Lisa Campion. I'm a psychic, Reiki master, teacher, and energy healer. On my podcast, The Miracle of Healing, I'm going to help you on your healing path. Listen to conversations with leading teachers in energy medicine, quantum healing, and people who have recovered from loss and illness. Whether it's to take care of your own healing or to help other people, this is the podcast for you, right here on mindbodyspirit.fm.